Eureka! You found us! Welcome to the Check Out California Radio Show, your key to California hospitality. Hosted by Rad Gantos, principal of Rad Gantos & Associates, a hospitality and commercial real estate design firm, and Craig Sullivan, executive vice president of ParkWest GC, a hospitality and commercial real estate general contractor. Check Out California is focused on our state's hospitality, travel, and tourism markets, and on the large part they play in California's vibrant and innovative economic diversity and unique quality of life. Now, here are your hosts, Rad Gantos and Craig Sullivan.
Good afternoon and welcome to Check Out California. I am Craig Sullivan.
And I'm Rad Gantos, and I can't believe that this is the Check Out California show, because last time we were here, it was a lot more...
Rowdy? I don't know. Tequila, beer, good clients and friends all in one room.
Yeah, that was...
We had some food.
This is my shameless attempt to try to get people to actually go listen to our recorded shows.
Well, Alan will later today because one of his people...
Wait, hold on.
...was here.
That bottle had a lot more tequila in it when we left.
What happened to all the tequila? This is the coolest shaped bottle. I saved it. I'm not sure what I'm going to do it. I put it on camera here.
Okay,
that's good.
When we left the show, that was a lot more full. I'm trying to get people to basically go check us out on Facebook, and we have every single episode that we had last year basically on there. Alan was our first
guest,
and he is again our first in 2018. So hi, Alan.
Hi.
Good to have you back.
Yes, good to be
please
back.
Please welcome Mr. Alan Ray, the man, the myth, the legend. 21 years ago, he formed Atlas Hospitality Group.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And the market leader.
You know, he has to be here on the first of every year now. From this is like a trend. He was on the first show. Now he's on the first show of this year. He's going to have to be on 2019 and beyond.
I think that's a
the
great
look on
idea.
Alan's face is like, oh, God, what did I get myself into?
Yeah, what did I get myself into? So, Alan, Happy New Year. Thank you again for being here. You know, I can't say enough good things about Atlas Hospitality, and I know that you won't because you're very humble about it, but you've got a group of people with you with practically zero turnover that have been with you for 21 years, and others that have come to
That's
you
phenomenal.
Later during that course, and you guys dominate the market. It's, select service, boutique, full service from time to time on a large scale, but certainly the smaller ones.
You got to tell everybody what he does, though.
Alan runs the best hotel brokerage firm in the state of California. It is just amazing what he has accomplished with his crew for 21 years. And you guys all started at another firm. You left when you discovered hospitality. You guys were all apartment guys.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. And see, I know the history pretty well. We go back a number of years.
Let's give out Atlas's website, too, for people that are listening that don't know about Alan, want to find out as well.
Go ahead, Alan.
It's www.atlashospitality.com.
And if you don't get the Atlas Hospitality Group newsletter, call Wilson at Atlas's office, and he'll get you on the mailing list. Don't call Alan, but call Wilson. He'll thank me for that. But, you know, give us a recap, if you would, of last year. How many deals did you guys do? What's the volume that you've seen throughout the state for last year?
Yeah, so 2017 was obviously a very good year to be in the hotel business, both from ownership, financing, and the brokerage side. We had a record year last year. We did over 35 hotel sales in California. Wow. So for us, that was a banner year. And sales across the board, thank you, sales across the board for all of California were higher than 2016, and 2016 was a phenomenal year.
Yeah.
So
Wow. It
really is continuing on strong throughout 2017, and we're really seeing no let up coming into the new year.
You're not seeing any tightening on the refinance side of the hotels right now, but what about on construction loans? Because we do have a lot of development going on, especially on the select service side, unlike the last cycle where we had more full service. So are we starting to see a little bit of contraction with the lenders on construction loans?
Absolutely not. The opposite.
Love it.
2017, again, was a record year for hotel rooms open. Just beat out the last peak year, which was 2008. Yeah. And 2018 is on track to even beat 2017 with almost twice the number of new rooms already under construction.
And how do you explain that, Alan?
I think there's a lot of factors that play into it. One is the availability of financing that Craig mentioned earlier.
Right.
Historically low rates for financing.
Yeah.
Tremendous amount of overseas capital coming into California, especially from China and through the immigration EB-5 program.
Right.
And that hotels have been seeing record increases in revenue and profitability. So all around, it's a, you know, what we would call a perfect storm in terms of incentives for new development.
Paul, you got a question?
Yeah, somebody wants to know if the new tax code is going to help or hurt that.
Man, they just cut to the chase, didn't they, right away?
The audience has been building since the first time you were here. We're getting questions on Twitter and email. And Paul, before Alan answers that, would you give out the studio phone number and all the various ways that they can contact us with questions?
You can watch us live on Facebook Live. OC Talk Radio is putting us out on our feed. You can watch us on YouTube at our OC Talk Radio channel live or later. We're even trying Periscope today through Twitter. That's where this one came in, through Twitter. And if you want to listen live, you can call in and be part of the show at 949-330-7761. 949-330-7761. Operators standing by.
What about the Twitter questions? Where do they send those to, Paul?
Hashtag OC Talk Radio.
There we go. Okay, Alan.
So, on the taxes, obviously very early stages, but for anyone in the real estate field and the hotel industry, it looks to be very positive, especially if you have ownership in real estate investment trusts. Corporate tax rate has been slashed down to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the impact that we have with not being able to write off your state taxes against your federal income taxes, but for people in the hotel ownership, it's definitely a plus.
Plus, yeah, absolutely.
So with it being a banner year last year, Alan, is it something that was pretty common across, I know you guys focus on California, but just in general, was it common across the country or was it by market? Like I want to bring the focus back that California may be its own animal when it comes to the hospitality market, or was this just a common trend across the country?
It was a common trend across the country. Hotel sales were up all over the United States.
And you foresee that as continuing this year?
So far, yes. If the economy continues strong with the tax cuts, all of the signals point to more money back into the economy, record stock prices, people feeling good about house prices, and feeling good about spending money. We're seeing it in the high-end luxury segment of the hotel industry, which usually is a reflection of how good the economy
is doing. Exactly. Well, you know, let's talk about development for a bit. I sent you an article last week. The City of Los Angeles Council, in its infinite wisdom, and the mayor went along with this, tacked in a linkage fee on development. Now, this is a fee that will now generate at least $3 to $5 per square foot on commercial and hospitality development. It's going to be a fee that has to be paid when you pull your permit for housing and affordable housing, as I read it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
What's your feeling? I mean, all of our costs, whether it's development or day-to-day expenses, always end up going back to the consumer.
And I'm assuming that this is a linkage fee that's on top of other linkage fees that are already in place, like schools and what have you, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I think
why do they call it a linkage fee? Isn't it just a tax or another permit fee?
So that they don't use the T word.
Yeah.
I think it's really going to impact other industries, less so the hotels. Residential, I think it's over $10 per square foot, as long as it's over 15,000 square feet. And this is money that the city supposedly is putting back into low-income housing. Whether or not it finds its way there or into other pots at the city is a question that
Because historically there's been a question on where those resources go, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, in the city of Los Angeles, they offer so many incentives for hotel development that if you take, let's say, a 50,000 square foot building, maybe 100 rooms in downtown Los Angeles, that would be $250,000 extra fee. But the city is giving back so much in terms of transient occupancy tax rebates.
Right. In fact, fast tracking and various other things as well.
The one project right next to the convention center that's being approved, I think, is receiving over $130 million incentives from the city. Mm-hmm. So really the linkage fee
is minor. If
is minor in relation to what the city is giving in terms of incentives for people to build hotels in downtown.
So is there a political feel-good about it? Meaning that this is something that we are putting out there because of the increase in rentals, the high cost of living, that this affordable housing is an issue, that's maybe a point for people that they went ahead and did that, when in reality, like you're saying, Alan, it washes out with the incentives that they're also giving for the hospitality industry?
I think in the hotel side, it doesn't even match up to the incentives that the city is offering to hotel developers.
So it may cause other sectors to basically be impacted.
Definitely. Residential, mm-hmm. condominiums, mm-hmm. and anything in the retail sector, office sector, which mm-hmm. are not getting any of the incentives that the hotel developers get.
Yeah. Very good.
Interesting.
Very
good. I take it you don't really like it.
You know, I'm ambiguous about it right now. I think Alan's absolutely right on target. I think if you factor it in and you look in comparison to other commercial development and what we as hoteliers are getting, it's a blip. It's, you know, I don't like a city council doing something like this just because I think the public should have more input, and I think that we should have a definite set course on where and how the money is used. Mm-hmm. You look at, you know, people forget that the city of Los Angeles is far more than just downtown LA, mm-hmm. East LA, West LA. It's 3/4, 2/3 of the San Fernando Valley. There's a lot of other areas that are all incorporated within the city. And much like some of the other organizations, they probably should have been broken up in the 70s. The San Fernando Valley should have become its own city back then, but that'll never happen now. It's too intertwined. The tax base and everything else comes into the city and the county is astronomical. I'm just not sure that there were the public debate that I would have liked to have seen.
Well, I appreciate the fact that there's sort of that resistance to the additional regulation. Totally get that. And the fact that, you know, there's no necessarily checks and balances on where the money goes that's supposedly being slotted for that kind of stuff, right? And in the past, Los Angeles County, Orange County, whatever county you may want to look, there's grounds for why we are distrusting of that, right? I want to just ask this question relevant to our hospitality industry because, again, other than on the construction and the sales side of it, we also have people that actually work in the hospitality industry. And in some cases, these people are working at properties where they're commuting from quite a distance. So is this potentially something, and again, I'm with you, I'm kind of ambiguous right now about it, but I don't know how I feel about it, but in principle, could this be something that could benefit by providing more affordable housing in areas
closer
to these?
It's done the right way, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if it's done the right way. They're the right backstops to make sure that this goes into affordable housing and not potholes. Or redoing the fire hydrant system. It seems like every
always, the devil is in the details.
Yeah,
I think that it's an issue that you run into any time you have a very expensive area, whether it's Manhattan,
absolutely,
downtown San Francisco, Los Angeles. So you have Los Angeles adding thousands of more new hotel rooms.
Right.
And they're talking about maybe being able to add a couple of thousand low-income housing units. There's a huge disparity there. It's an issue that we've had, you know, ever since
you've
had
hotels. Time, right? Yeah.
And it's always going to continue.
Sure.
So I don't know what the solution is. I don't think the solution is putting the money in the city's pockets to have them either build these projects, or in the case of San Diego, which just recently closed on a hotel to house low-income, provide low-income housing, and they're paying over market. They're paying much more for that product than a investor would pay.
Well, that's why I pointed it out, because there's a certain amount of this that's very timely. I mean, we go through political cycles too, right? And there's an aspect of affordable housing and sort of that kind of high price of rentals or lack of properties for rentals in areas that are single family development that we seem to be at this crust right now, where this is a repetitive issue and topic that's going to happen all the way through, at least to the midterms in 2018. And a lot of people are jockeying to be on the right side of the topic by things like that. So when I saw that, it was interesting. I understood kind of what was happening, and my immediate reaction is like, well, wait a minute, no more regulations. And wait, I'm going to give it to you, so I don't trust that you're going to spend it the right way from previous history. But then I realize that there's more to play, more happening here, and that there's some of these topics are actually very cyclical. We're leading up to an election cycle in 2018.
Absolutely.
And this is something that every one of these areas that has people that are looking for affordable housing.
Hey, turn that
off. People are already calling me to basically whine at me for what I'm saying. But it could very much be something that we don't even talk about in 2019.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong that I'm against regulation. I just want a public hearing on it. I want the discussion to get deep and hard and heated. Now, okay, the EPA, for instance, okay, I think that's a good organization. I like to be able to breathe. I like to be able to drink our water and things like that. So I think they've done a great job, and I am opposed to them being gutted. But I'm just really questioning whether or not this particular linkage fee is going to do what is promised. And I don't know if there was enough discussion.
But I think that distrust occurs in anything that has additional regulations. Look, this show is California, right? So one of the main gripes that people have is that we're regulated to death over here, right? That it gets in the way of development, it gets in the way of investment, it gets in the way of all kinds of stuff, right? And begrudgingly all basically huff
but
and
we
puff
all pay
and
that
stay
toll.
Here because we want to be in California.
Like the toll road.
You really? That's not. I'm not talking toll road. I'm giving toll road the break for the first two shows, and then I'm going to basically hammer them. But no, I mean it really is an issue, right, in the state
it
of
is.
California when it comes to regulations and the high taxes and people would argue that yes, maybe the hotel industry is going to benefit from the tax bill that happened, but as a state, we're getting hammered with taxes in a different manner than other states, right?
Absolutely.
So this is all part of our reality being, you know, welcome to California. This is part of your reality.
Right. Alan, what are you seeing trend-wise in the newer developments that are out there? You've been to the new Intercon. You've seen the other IHG product that opened up in downtown L.A.
The Indigo.
And that's a beautiful hotel.
Yes.
I was fortunate enough to stay there with Glenn Houseman and a bunch of other people. We did that hotel ROI conference last year. So I really got to see a lot of that hotel. It was set up beautifully. I love the lobby, the grab and go right across from the front desk. So there was a lot of economies of scale that worked really nicely there. What are you seeing trend-wise in these newer hotel assets that are opening up?
Well,
and even deep renovated hotels like the Hyatt at LAX where we'll be for Meet the Money.
So you just mentioned it, grab and go. So we're seeing the slow death of room service in hotels as well as restaurants and hotels. Yeah. They're going to more of that grab and go. Or if you see here in Orange County at the Irvine Hotel or at the Islands Hotel, it has more of a mini-mart situation. Other trends are micro rooms. So you've got the brands like Moxie with Marriott, where you might have in the past had 200 rooms, they're now going to 330 rooms with much more space in the open spaces, communal areas, less space in the rooms and more space in the lobby
areas.
There's
more of a social component that's being put in.
Absolutely.
Correct.
You know, our friend Glenn Houseman from No Vacancy posted a interview with the development team and ownership group on the new Moxie in Manhattan. And besides a roof bar with a little pitch and putt on it, they went through all the other restaurants, the F&B components, and everything else. And I got to tell you, next time I'm in New York, I'm staying at that hotel. I got to check this out. So
600 rooms, and even in those rooms, as small as they are, they have bunk beds in there.
Yeah, exactly.
So four or five people per room. Other developments, you know, using your iPhone to open up the door of the hotel as opposed to a key card lock. And robots.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of concern from the unions right now that a lot of people are going to lose their jobs because of automation in the hotel industry. A lot of hotels, you can bypass now the front desk
mm-hmm. right.
and just go straight to your room.
Yeah.
So
you sparked something. Some you said robots, and people went, robots, question mark. What do the robots do?
The rope.
Bags. They can check you in, any number of things. What do you
mm-hmm. deliver stuff?
I mean, yeah, your room yes. service, all of that.
A little like a little, literally like a little Roomba, a little one of those vacuum cleaners just arrives at your door.
I'd
with
say
a,
between well, that and R2-D2.
Yeah, okay. So it's more like RT. Yeah, something from
Star Wars.
And it shows up and it has your food or your drink or your bathrobes or your extra towels or something? Or?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that they can do. You can... another thing that they're getting rid of now is the concierge, where
right.
you know
mm-hmm.
you can utilize the robot in terms of information in the local area. So they will deliver stuff.
And it's not that far-fetched, right? Alexa,
yeah, right.
You know, Amazon or a Google Home. I mean, there's a lot of automation that's happening in people's houses and has become more accustomed to that. So you go
right.
stay at a property and you already have that kind of training, or you've self-trained yourself at home. Then you adopt to that technology very easily in a hospitality setting, and you don't think that it's strange that there isn't somebody there opening the door for you.
But do you lose the hospitality part?
And we had that conversation with Larry Brockman
last
year.
Yeah. So it's
how do you maintain the corporate culture image? We care for you that you talk so much about, Craig. You know, when you walk into a property, they care about you. They take care of you the whole way through. If it's all anonymous, if it's all automated.
I don't think that's ever going to be replaced by automation. I think there's a lot of other sectors that are going to be equally as impacted, if not more so. I also think since the dawn of of the industrial age, every job has a lifespan. Whether it was the old assembly lines or what Henry Ford invented, going from a tube amplifier to solid state. You look at what Tesla's doing, and UPS and Amazon have already ordered the driverless trucks. So mm-hmm. are the Teamsters going to be the next one out? In theory, your pilot on American Airlines. Okay, he's basically a bus driver at this point. He's gone. There's a kid with a joystick sitting in a room somewhere flying the plane.
Well, and that you know that's all the sort of the romanticized reasoning.
Yeah.
But there's also a nuts and bolts fact reasoning. I mean, there's a bottom line impact, right? I mean, when you talk about there's going to be companies that are going to be reinvesting in the market and stuff like that. Yeah, but that reinvestment may be automation. It may be cost savings. You know, more capacity, less cost. Okay, which translates to a better bottom line situation, a more competitive market, right? So, Alan, the question to you on this, relevant to this, is this a trend? Is this a fad? Is this something that we are going to, in 5 years or 10 years, go back and go, we went too far on the technology side? What do you think? Is it going to be different depending on the sector in the hospitality industry?
Yeah, I think it's a trend. It's here to stay. I think labor cost is the highest cost for any hotel operation. So it's always a balance between lowering your cost and increasing or improving the service. So I think that in a business hotel where the guest just wants to get to his room, do his work, or do her work, and get out the next day and move mm-hmm. on, I think automation works. If you're going to a resort hotel or in the wine country for a bed and breakfast, then you're spending a lot more time in the hotel mm-hmm. or around that area, you're probably looking for a bit more service. And again, I think that this is good for competition because mm-hmm. hotels that cater to one kind of service mm-hmm. Will do very, very well versus a hotel that's perhaps not offering that service but is doing a lower cost. Ultimately, it's the customer's and the consumer's choice.
Well, it always goes back to knowing your market, right? Knowing who your profile end user is, guest, if you will, and what their expectations are. And those expectations are not static. They change.
And on top of that is training.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because you can have a lot of employees, but if you've not trained them correctly,
absolutely,
then it's wasted money.
Or in what we're talking about, retrain them, right? Because you will still need that person to maybe manage that robot, but you may need less of them but their level of skill level will have to be now increased. So there's a retraining opportunity. There's other things for these people that want to stay in the industry to basically be reallocating it as a resource, especially if they have that expertise from that is still applicable.
Right. Okay, we're going to a commercial, or do you have a question, Paul?
Commercial.
Great.
We'll be right back.
I bet it's for click.
Well, find out. You think?
It could be. Let's listen.
From Eureka to San Diego and Malibu to Bakersfield, the California Lodging Investment Conference, CLIC, is one of a kind, focusing exclusively on our Golden States hotel market. CLIC was launched in 2016 by Craig Sullivan, a seasoned hospitality industry professional, to harness the knowledge of our industry leaders, support our community, and educate emerging talent. CLIC brings together lodging professionals from California and beyond for one day of learning, professional development, and networking. If you are an owner, operator, investor, broker, developer, lender, management company, brand, or professional services provider, you should plan on attending CLIC 2 on March 8, 2018 at the Hilton Irvine Orange County Airport. We invite you to go check out the California Lodging Investment Conference website at cliconference.com for the latest details and sponsorship opportunities. Early registration now open, and as a listener of the Checkout California radio show, please make sure to use our exclusive discount code of CHECKOUTCA when registering for this one-of-a-kind California hospitality event that sold out in its very first year.
All right, I wish we could tape the off-camera conversation.
No, you can't.
But I asked, and you
we need
guys,
some safe space with our
I asked, and some people have asked on Twitter, how far did these trends go? What other futuristic things? Talk about the Star Wars hotel. We're going to have virtual reality in that. You talked about pods. You talked about pop-up hotels. Other really way-out concepts. Talk about some of those. How far do we go?
You're going to have a device called a microwave, and you can put food in it, and it'll heat it up.
It won't cook in the room?
But it'll heat it up.
Oh, my goodness.
But you'll have to adjust your pattern. You can't put something in metal container in there, because that'll be a very short-lived.
Seriously. I want to know about Star Wars Hotel. How far are they going to have virtual reality? Are they going to have things projected, holograms in the hallway?
Hold on a second. Can I just did everybody in this room see the last Star Wars?
I did not.
No.
I did not.
You did not?
Not
yet. Oh, okay. Well, then never mind. I'm going to ask this question later.
Okay.
But, but if you do go see the last movie, it was great in its attempt to reboot the brand, okay?
Right.
But I didn't understand why, after how many years has it been, over 20 years that this franchise has been out there, why are we still looking at stuff that's the same technology? Like we're looking at technology on Star Wars that isn't even evolving. It's the same technology,
same stuff
that's happening. And I found that very fascinating. It was almost like somebody showing a Star Trek to me and saying, "Look, here's a transponder, right?" And it's exactly the same thing as what Kirk used.
Well, to segue into the hotel business, it's interesting because one of the trends that we're seeing today with hotel construction are modular hotel rooms, which first came out 30, 40 years ago. Today's modular hotel room is not your parents' modular hotel room where you walk into a hotel and you can bounce around on the floor. These are very, very solid. And it's not that they're cheaper construction. It's just that they're quicker to get constructed.
Less time. Yeah.
So less time. In fact, there's a property in San Jose that all the modular rooms were constructed in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
So figure the cost of shipping those out.
Wow.
Because what you're talking about, Alan, those factories, quote unquote, for prefab, right? For the modular, there's not a lot of them out there, right? In fact, we have a shortage given what that trend is. I know for a fact that they were talking about putting one in a huge facility in Saudi Arabia and having it be sort of an export situation. Yeah, and when you say it's not cheaper, well, it's less time.
Yes.
So it may not be the cost of the actual unit, but it's definitely saving you money because you're opening sooner.
You're opening sooner, and you get the stabilization quick.
Well, and you have certain things that are already pre-programmed based on your design that you're not wasting the time to modify on-site during construction, right?
Right.
I mean, the stuff is already there.
Right. It's plug and play for the most part.
That's another good trend to bring out, that's happening more and more. It's just that the supply isn't there. So that could be an interesting thing what happens as far as an emerging market or production.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How about pop-up hotels? Somebody wants to know. What's a pop-up? I don't know what that is.
So pop-up hotels would be, for example, at a music festival, Coachella, that they would also probably known as glamping.
Glamping? Yeah. Glamorous camping.
Yeah, glamorous camping. So they would be modulars that are mobile hotel rooms, and they're up for a short period of time, again, usually during the 2 weeks that Coachella is on.
Do they have to get permits, and don't the local hoteliers get upset about that?
They're sold out. For something like that, they're sold out. And, yeah, there's permits and all that, but, you know, these are yurts, they're Airstream trailers, there are, you know, a few other things in there that you can get in there. And, you know, if you think about it, you've been following all the oil crews coming down into Canada and across the United States. Mm-hmm. Okay, and they need a place to stay. So it's been the same thing. It's been this pop-up, you know, hotel scenario. So you can, you know, put a series of, you know, let's say 4 to 6 of these together, and that's your front desk and your grab-and-go and your breakfast bar. And then you can have the standalones with that are fully self-contained with a restroom and shower and power and everything else.
And so, you follow the festival.
Pretty sophisticated, exactly. Actually. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, you could pop up a cluster of, you know, a retreat.
Yeah.
That has all the amenities that you need for a short duration of time, and basically pay top dollar, and you're not really limited by location. You're actually more flexible on the location. You could actually tie people into, let's say, a program where, you know, every 2-3 months there's a pop-up by that company at an exotic location that you would never get permitted to actually build in, yeah. Right? But you would get the glamping ability to do for a 10-day period.
Didn't Marriott do Coachella or Old Cella when they had the Stones and everybody out there?
I don't know. I
want to say it was Marriott.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised at all, because you know the joke the last couple of years on Coachella was that, oh yeah, the Coachella festival, you know, like the grassroots, you know, Woodstock version on the West Coast basically has gone corporate, right? And now you got sponsorships and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, it's just the natural order of things. Things evolve in that manner. There's value, there's profitability, there's attraction, there's an interesting experience. Boom, of course, you'd be stupid if you're not going to get into that market.
Who in this room other than Paul wants to sleep in a sleeping bag on the ground, okay?
In a pair of cargo shorts.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God, yeah, he's got long pants.
I got long pants. It's cold out.
He's got long pants on.
How about somebody else? I just want to know about your other crazy one that you asked. What do you call them? Pods? These like morgue slabs that you at the airports you just slide yourself in like you're in a mortuary. And
well, they're a stacked unit, and they started out in
like sleep
in
like
Tokyo,
like sleeping
as I recall.
Pods.
Yeah.
Correct.
And it's just a sleeping pod. You pay your $2 and you get in there for X amount of hours, and it's a place to lay down and sleep, and yeah, maybe read a book if you
can't
want
be
to.
Claustrophobic because you slide yourself into these things.
Exactly, you do slide yourself in.
And don't knock it, right? I mean, the one of the growing services that is being sold by spas and wellness centers across the world is silence.
Yeah, you pay for silence.
I'm going to walk in, and now my question always is: do you actually argue and haggle on the price of silence or not? Walk in and you go, I want silence, and then they give you the price and you go, you know, okay. But all seriousness, that is a service that people are paying for. So in a world where we live where you're supposed to get 6 hours of minimum sleep, 7 is the healthier, and it has a direct impact on your – we just had a show. Parkinson's, you know, dementia, all this stuff, healthy sleeping, okay – if you're not getting your sleep and you can't get back home, right, a sleeping pod.
I haven't had healthy sleep in decades.
Yeah, but it's a total different story why, okay? And we don't have enough time on this show to get into it, right? You'd have to listen to the show from Christmas, then you'll get a sense of why. But you know, these things are actually a very interesting service of offering for people that are in need for that. And then we were just talking when we were off the air that when you think about a sleeping pod, think about first class, and you know how much do people pay for those things on like Etihad Airlines or Emirates or there was one that I just saw that I believe was it Malaysian Airlines? Yeah. I think somebody sent it to me. That thing looks ridiculous. It's like a suite in a small, tight compartment area.
Exactly.
Now, if you're European or you live in New York, you're already used to that space anyway, right?
Yeah.
And there's thousands and hundreds of like 20,000, 30,000.
But is that still the hotel industry? Is that what is that?
It's all hospitality, right?
It's part of it.
It's all service. It's all care.
Well, just think of someone like
I'll even sing you a lullaby. How's that?
Comes in and they get the rights to every international airport in the United States to put these pods in.
Right.
Okay. It's not a whole lot of real estate. Okay.
Cost controlled.
You know, you've got staff, cleaning staff already at the airports. You know, if I'm traveling from Tokyo to Los Angeles, and then I've got to switch planes and go to London, and I've got a 3 to 4 hour gap. Yeah, I want a pod. I don't want to leave the airport.
Yeah, you don't want to curl up on a chair somewhere.
So, exactly. Paul, if I asked you, if you had the ability to go to a lounge at an airport, okay, you got a connecting flight. You know, you're flying overseas. You cross the pond. You got to follow up. You got about maybe 3-4 hours, whatever, and you have access to the lounge.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank American Express for that access, by the way.
You wouldn't even question the fact that you'd go enjoy the lounge, right?
No, exactly.
Okay, so you've had your free drink. I've done it myself. You've had a shower. You know, you might even have a steam room, whatever, right?
Massage.
And you've got yourself a couple of hours before your flight connection, right? And the only place for you to sleep is in the friggin' armchair.
Yeah.
In the lounge, right? If there was actually a pod, there would be no question about it.
Yeah.
A hole in the wall.
It's a short-term stay.
Yeah. You do it
basically.
In a heartbeat.
Right.
So is that a trend or is that a fad? Did it come and go?
I don't know.
I don't think it's ever gone away. Yeah, exactly. I think it was adversely impacted after 9/11, just because of security concerns.
None of us slept.
Yeah. So, you know, I think, Tokyo, Heathrow, a few of the others that have
South
these,
the
they found it to work out very well. And I would say it's either going to be LAX or Kennedy that starts that first in this country, and then it moves across the country at that
point. So in Toledo, they'll have pods so you can sleep for 2 hours or something?
If you're going to Toledo, I guess. I don't know. Not to offend anybody from Toledo. But,
or Detroit.
You kind of did. But.
I kind of did, sort of. Alan, what hotels are moving quicker right now in the state of California? Select service, boutique, or full service?
Still select service.
Okay.
And one of the main reasons that we've seen this uptick in transactions is a lot of people are selling out of apartments in California. They're trading at record prices, very low return on capital, and they're finding that they can move out of apartments and buy hotels for twice the return that they were getting in apartments.
Wow.
So for those kind of owners, it is select service. They're not going to jump from an apartment building into a full service. And it, again, is deals that are $15 million and below, comprises of about 70%
of the market. Yeah.
Now, is it a step for those owners? Is it an introduction, if you will, from the apartment to the? I mean, what have you seen in your?
Yeah, it's definitely an introduction.
Isn't it an entry hospitality property?
Yeah, it's typically entry. You know, limited service, Holiday Inn Express, Travelodge, Ramada. These are what we call the budget brands, mid-price brands. But I think that they're realizing it's a lot more management intensive than just managing an apartment building.
Right.
And the other part of that equation is that, you know, if this is a first-time owner and they have to put debt on the property and they've got a brand involved, neither one of them is going to allow them to manage it. They're going to have to bring in a management group. Because
an opportunity for that expertise to be rechanneled, right? But it also,
if you're
a smart owner, you actually would welcome that because you're out of your element.
You're out of your element.
As far as a learning curve,
are not yours. You don't have to deal with the HR issues, and there's a lot of upside with that. But you know, if you're going to come in there, and Alan, please correct me if I'm wrong, and I think you're seeing more and more of this. We've seen more fresh blood in the marketplace, and they are taking advantage of management companies and listening to professional service providers such as yourself and your team and the lenders that, hey, here's our checklist. Sit down with somebody, engage with them, and they will help you through this. And, you know, whether it's a Broughton Hotels and Interstate Hotels or, Brighton, any number of hotel companies that, you know, and RAR down in San Diego, our buddy Bob Roush, the hotel guru, you can bring them in and they can coach you and help you through the franchise agreement and everything else. But I think a lot of it starts with Alan and his team and getting people to go, hey, look, I've got a Brinks truck full of money or two, and I want to find something. Can you help me? And what is the process? What are some of the hurdles that we're going to come across? Because I don't think you're finding a lot of people out there educating the new investors on it. And well, hence, that's part of the reason for having the California Lodging Investment Conference.
So this may be a good point to ask the question, Alan. So in you've been on this for 21 years.
Actually, 30 years.
21 years as Atlas, right?
Yeah.
But so has that investor profile changed? Whether it be aid? I mean, we've talked about sources of funding and you know, where it happens to come in, and it tends to change. You know, we had that whole Japanese money influx in California, and now we got the Chinese money coming in and all this stuff, and that's driven by a whole range of different things, right? But has that investor profile changed? Has the person who's interested in getting into hospitality now changed from what it was maybe like 10 years ago, 20 years ago? Was it institutional versus individual versus groups? What are you seeing?
I wouldn't say it's changed. It's maybe morphed a little bit, but it's, you know, the Stada hotels are all entrepreneurs, hardworking. 30 years ago, this was the first generation of Asian Indian hotel owners. Mm-hmm. So now we have second and third generation. We have a lot of Korean investors that have come into the hotel business, Vietnamese, obviously Chinese. We saw a lot of Japanese in the late 80s, early 90s, but they've now... And they were pretty much focused on trophy hotels.
Right.
But when we talk about the limited service, these are homegrown entrepreneurs who it's extremely hardworking, and it's the same profile that was 20 or 30 years ago. Probably more sophisticated, more tech savvy today.
Well, like I said, if it's the second generation or so forth that's still involved in them, then they have the experience base already in.
Correct.
Right. And it tends to be like sort of a family, but they're working in it. They're involved in it. It's very much them versus just a portfolio element, basically.
Yes.
Somebody wanted to know what's the average price of one of these select service today. What are they talking about?
And we're talking in the California market.
Yeah. So an average price on a per room basis is around $100,000 per room. So for a 50 room hotel, that would be $5 million. 100 room hotel, around $10 million.
Very good.
Okay.
Now, not giving away any trade secrets.
No.
What are you doing to inspire your team and to get new clients? You and I have been dealing with a lot of the same people for 20, 25 years, some cases longer. But we are seeing some morphing. We are seeing some different entrepreneurs, some different tech people, a few others coming into the market. What are you doing to get out there to add to your clients?
It's a very good question. I mean, you've been doing this at Atlas of 21. How do you? Yeah, that's great.
They come to him. He doesn't look.
Well, actually,
I do. Let me tell you.
I think it's a little different 21 years on because, 21 years ago, no one had heard of Atlas Hospitality Group.
Right.
So we get a lot of business through referrals and through bank clients that we have. Your earlier question, why do they come to Atlas? We're really a very specialized company. We specialize exclusively in California. We've done this for 21 years. I would probably say we have better data and information than any other company out there just because we've got 10 or 12 guys collecting that information for the last 20-plus years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost like going to a doctor. Do you want to go to a heart surgeon that's done 2,500 heart surgeries, or do you want to go to a heart surgeon that's his first practice?
Yeah, right.
So from that standpoint, if they're looking for experience,
they're
looking for knowledge, they're looking for someone with hopefully a very good reputation, that's where we get the business. But we
and
also,
longevity with your firm as well.
And longevity, but we spend a lot of money on research and data and tracking those owners that are in exchanges, 1031 exchanges, which obviously was one of the good things for us that did not get cut by the tax changes, because that's a huge, huge amount of acquisitions are made through 1031 exchanges, tax-deferred exchanges.
Does everybody know what that is? Do you want to explain that real quickly?
So, yeah, 1031 tax-deferred exchange is when you sell a property, you're allowed to purchase another property within 180 days and not pay any taxes.
On the gain.
The taxes are deferred.
Yeah.
So if you sell a hotel for $5 million and you go and buy another hotel for $7 or $8 million and you close that hotel within 6-month time frame, your money is basically in a separate third-party account, and you don't pay any taxes. Whereas if you sold a hotel and didn't use the benefits of a 1031 exchange, you're going to pay taxes, capital gains, as well as state tax of around 35 to 40%. So it's a huge savings.
But doesn't that beg the question that you really got to know what you're doing? Because if you fail to close within that window, the benefit goes away, right?
Yes, but if you just sold anyway, you're going to pay that tax.
Tax.
Right.
So you can put this money with what they call an accommodator, and you have to select up to three properties in 45 days, and then you have to close on at least one of those within 180 days. If you don't, you pay the taxes, but you were going to pay those anyway.
Anyway,
see, right. And that's where you get an advisor or an advisory group such as Alan
that really knows the market.
You know, they can put all the pieces together and help you assemble your team for a hotel investment. And you know, when I was doing title and escrow services, it was the same thing. You know, I'd sit down and go through the title report, talk to Alan or his people and see what was going on. You know, we closed on every deal that we opened.
Mm-hmm.
Every one. It may not have been in 60 or 90 days like we wanted, but if it fell out, we didn't cancel everything because we knew Alan and his team would have another buyer and we'd be back in escrow shortly. So, and we closed all of our deals in California on time. You know, there were some that we struggled with, no doubt about it, because you never know what a county recorder is going to do. But, you know, we closed every one of our deals on time.
Mm-hmm. So, is California harder to close in than other states?
In some instances, it is. In others, such as not having the county recorder digitized, it's much more difficult to get the documents recorded and confirmation done. So you have to do a stopgap endorsement to the policy, and escrow calls it closed at a certain date and time, and you move forward from there.
Well, Alan, how do you guys get compensated for your services?
It is commission only. So if we
doesn't close,
he does this for if the it doesn't love close, of it. We don't get paid. And that's another important point.
Yeah.
We probably end up saying no to more deals than we say yes to,
mm-hmm.
because we've got to be convinced that we can sell it at the price that the seller needs to get. And more importantly, we were able to get it financed.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not, then you know, I have the one saying with our company is you make money on the deals you say no to, mm-hmm. not the deals you say yes to.
Absolutely.
Because you can waste a lot of time, effort, and energy.
Well, nobody wants to waste time or energy, so how many clients do you have in the seller position that have now gotten emotional about their asset and they feel that it's worth $15 million
more than what you
told them? And realistically, it's only worth 10 to 12. What's that conversation
that's
like?
That's the main reason I focused on hotels and commercial real estate, because
you didn't have the emotional
attachment. You have emotion, but you don't have it like you have in a residential component.
Right.
So you're dealing with businessmen, mm-hmm. and it's numbers.
Yeah.
So someone may love their hotel, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, it is how much profit does this hotel mm-hmm. make?
Right.
And that's what I have to take to a new investor and sell them on. Now, an owner might say, but he can do better than me. Well, maybe they can, but that's their upside.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you can't expect to sell your property as if it's doing $1 million in net income when it's only doing 500,000.
Thousands.
Numbers are the numbers are the numbers.
Numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
That's
it. They don't. Let's talk about the disgruntled atmosphere out there right now on resort fees and urban destination charges, which are basically the same thing.
And define those just so everybody knows what they are.
You know, a resort fee is a fee that you pay up and above and beyond what your room rate is. Now, you know, it started out as being for the full-service destination resorts, but all of a sudden it ended up at every hotel around Disneyland and in Orlando and various, you know, Universal Studios.
So and you're then paying for the room, but then you're also paying for the access to everything.
All the amenities, the spa, the pool,
whether you use it or not,
center,
that's your daily.
It's
almost, you'd argue, like, you know, if you park your car, like there would be a daily
and there is.
Charge, right?
Yeah.
So that,
yeah. And now with most hotels not running their own parking lots anymore, that charge has gone up as well. But that's a different
scenario. I'm just explaining it for Paul, who basically has his own glamping thing.
And because you can't really call like a 500-room downtown Los Angeles hotel
a resort,
right. That is an urban destination charge. Mm. So what
it's
are you
a charge
hearing?
To go to that urban destination? Is that what you're saying? To go to Los Angeles?
No, it's elevating the property by label to where you can charge an additional fee.
And it's a separate line item on your customer's bill.
Yeah.
There was $200 a night or $300 a night for the hotel and something for the
$25 a night for the urban destination charge. Yeah, and then you've got transit occupancy tax, and you've got this, and then you've got state sales tax, and you've got a few other things.
And people pay this?
Yeah. He goes glamping. Okay? He's at the beach. He pays $12. Well,
guys, let me ask this for the people that are listening. Right, when we say resort, right?
Yeah.
In the industry, that means that there's certain amenities that are part of the offering on that.
Whether
property,
it's La Costa
right?
or Terranea, and that's
okay,
what pops into your head.
Alan? The whole point of staying at a resort is because you're paying for those resort facilities.
Exactly. Right.
Whether it's a beach, the pool, or whatever. The issue in this industry is that, as Paul asked, and they charge that and they can get away with it.
Yeah.
Why do they charge it? Because hotels can get away with it.
Right.
The urban fees was initiated in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to stay at a hotel in Manhattan, not only were you paying $300-$500 per night, plus around 20% taxes, that's another $100.
Yeah.
Then the hotel was charging you $25 to $30 on top of that. What was included?
Zip.
That included free Wi-Fi, maybe a newspaper, and maybe a drink. And if you were to say to the hotel, but I don't want any of that, you don't have the choice.
Yeah.
And that's the issue.
So
that
you're
have.
Paying to walk out to Times Square. You're paying for the proximity to the urban surrounding.
Correct.
The reason I was asking that question, Ellen, is because I really have a problem with when we talk about resort, to your point, there's the beach, there's something there that elevates that property as being a destination. And now we're putting the word destination on an urban setting that basically doesn't have that matrix of offerings, and that's what's getting under my skin is
okay.
Like,
but why do they get away with it? Because not enough people complain,
mm-hmm.
and enough people are paying that amount. So hotels will say, look, we've lost out on revenue from telephone. No one uses the telephone anymore. If you remember 30
right.
years ago, you would get on the telephone and you could end up having $100
charge,
you know, charge.
Yeah.
Renting a movie
has gone away.
Yeah.
So they're looking at anywhere that they can just, you know, recoup that. Over 1,600 hotels throughout the United States now charge anything from an urban fee to a resort fee.
Wow.
And unlike the baggage fees that you have with airlines, you have no choice. Baggage fee, you could say, okay, I'm going to take a carry-on. And I'm not, or else I'm going to wear three sets of clothes and get on the plane. But you don't, and it is why it is being challenged now, I think, at 47 states.
Yeah.
And attorney generals saying, look, we have an issue with this because the fee that you see when you go on Expedia or TripAdvisor will be the room rate. And then in the small type will be how much you're paying for the resort fee. So it makes it very confusing for the consumer, and I think that people are saying, look, if you're going to charge it, you need to put it into the actual
room
rate.
Yeah,
and raise the
rate. But doesn't now, that makes it interesting. I have to just throw this in because I go on Expedia if I do go in those places, and you immediately find the cheapest room, and you're saying, though, that when I go there, it's going to be bait and switch kind of feeling I'm going to have.
There's additional charges.
Oh, my goodness. I thought it was $80. I got it for $80, but there's another $80 in resort fees or destination.
Now, part of that is also to make up for the lost revenue with the OTAs. You know, nobody will admit that.
Yeah,
but
that's what I said. OTAs being what? These
online travel agencies,
right,
and the hotel is paying anywhere from 15% to 20% commission to
wow.
them.
So let me ask a question about the elephant in the room here. What is the benefit of that? How much of that fee actually goes to the property,
mm-hmm.
and how much of it actually goes to the municipality? Is this in a way a tax and not just
it's not a
fee?
Tax.
It's a way of getting around. It doesn't. The municipalities don't get any transient occupancy tax on that. It's just on the room rate.
So this goes directly to the actual property,
right.
or the operator.
Yeah. So, for example, it was widely known in Napa and Sonoma counties that you could go to a hotel and let's say you're paying $500 per night, and you've got complimentary breakfast. But they would break that down as $400 for the room and $100 for breakfast, because they're then just paying the transient occupancy tax on the $400.
So it's a way to avoid paying the municipality. It's a way to make up for what they're discounting for these online
travel
agencies. It's a way to make you think you get room for one thing, but then they make it back. And it's a way to make up for all these lost revenue sources.
And then I throw in a couple of robots in there.
And it's the most profitable segment of the hotel.
Right. Well, yeah, of course.
Doesn't that tarnish the brand, though? Aren't I pissed off when I show up and I think you guys just...
But you still paid it.
I paid it, but will I come back again?
Well...
I guess I will if they all are doing it.
That's the point.
That's the thing.
And if you look at Las Vegas today, and now the hotels are now charging for parking.
Yep.
Yeah.
They never did, right? It was just anything we could do to get a customer or a gambler into that hotel.
Right.
That's right.
And it's amazing that they all decided to do it at the same time.
Yep. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. No collusion.
Yeah, I had a problem with it, but I paid it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have no choice.
Yeah, when you're...
Where are you going to park? On the Strip?
Let's take another quick break, because I know you're going to do a little longer session today here and play another time for that commercial. I didn't hear the whole commercial the first time here. I was talking too much. I want to make sure I hear it this time.
Okay.
So we'll be back right after a word from our sponsor, which is...
Click!
From Eureka to San Diego and Malibu to Bakersfield, the California Lodging Investment Conference, Click, is one of a kind, focusing exclusively on our Golden States hotel market. Click was launched in 2016 by Craig Sullivan, a seasoned hospitality industry professional, to harness the knowledge of our industry leaders, support our community, and educate emerging talent. Click brings together lodging professionals from California and beyond for one day of learning, professional development, and networking. If you are an owner, operator, investor, broker, developer, lender, management company, brand, or professional services provider, you should plan on attending Click 2 on March 8, 2018 at the Hilton Irvine Orange County Airport. We invite you to go check out the California Lodging Investment Conference website at cliconference.com for the latest details and sponsorship opportunities. Early registration now open, and as a listener of the Checkout California radio show, please make sure to use our exclusive discount code of CHECKOUTCA when registering for this one-of-a-kind California hospitality event that sold out in its very first year.
All right, we're back after a second bite at the apple there, a second take on that commercial. When is the conference coming up? Let's just remind
you. It's going to be on March 8th at the Hilton Irvine Orange County Airport.
And you talk about all these things? I haven't been to the first one. What happens during? Give me a quick 30 seconds.
You know, are we allowing him in this year?
Yeah, we're going to allow him in. Yeah,
we're going to sort of have a remote in the glamping warehouse.
No, I'm setting it up to let people know that we're going to have a remote of the show.
Oh, yes, of course.
Hello.
Okay. So, last year we launched the California Lodging Investment Conference. Alan Ray was the second person I talked to about the conference after Larry Broughton. And Alan said, I'll give you a check. I can't help you, but I'll give you a check. And I said, yeah, but I want you to talk. He said, oh, yeah, I'll do that. So Alan is our sole keynote speaker this year. So he's going over the entire California hotel market. Sales, trends, development, where we're at, where we're going to a large degree. Alan has always been one of my barometers to follow for the investment cycle and where we're at, where we're going, and when I should change my strategies. It's a one-day event. Everything is in one room. We've got four panels, hotel investment and due diligence. We've got renovations. Pips construction, oh my, that's going to be an interesting topic, and that was because of our...
What was that? Say that one again?
It was construction, renovations, and pips, oh my.
Oh my.
And a PIP is a property improvement plan that the brand makes you execute every 5 years, let's say. And that was a direct... result of our audience feedback from last year's. We had two lending panels. We're down to one this year, and we replaced it with this panel. Then we've got the overview of the California hotel market, which Alan has his keynote, so it only makes sense that he does double duty, and he's on that panel at the end of the day.
Can I ask a tough question?
Yeah.
For people in the hotel industry, why aren't you forcing them to stay in a hotel overnight? You're doing it all in one day.
Yeah, we're doing it all in one day. That way they can take all this great knowledge that they're getting from Alan and Bob and Larry and Robert Lowe at East West Bank and all the other lenders and third-party professionals that are involved with this, and then go back to their office the next day. It hasn't cost them an arm and a leg. They are not behind the eight ball on their workload, and they can implement some of the ideas that have come to them in that one-day event. And the pillars with this conference are, it's one day, it's great information, it's affordable for the sponsors and exhibitors, and affordable for the attendees. The being conveniently located was just dumb luck. But the more I thought about it, and that was really what swayed me to have the conference over at the Hilton, was our brethren and sistren from Northern California can fly in and be in Orange County at 8 a.m., and they can fly back after the after party and sleep in their own bed and be in their office the next day.
Amazing. To your point, Paul, though, some people did stay.
I did, and I live here.
He had a short commute, but we go to a lot of these conferences, right? Mm-hmm. I think the trend for those who are serial conference goers is exactly this kind of conference, because the after party and the networking, all this stuff, we're kind of doing it on a daily basis all the time with people, especially if you're in a localized market. And so there's a lot of time wasted, a lot of energy wasted, and I just want to get in, get my stuff, get the information, meet with the people, shake the hand, get on the plane, get back, and start implementing.
And the second day is always a waste anyway. You wake up, and the exhibits are open for a couple hours, and something in the morning, and you feel like, why am I here the second day? You
know? I'm seeing a drop in attendance on a lot of these conferences that are multiple day, and it's across the board.
Yeah, and they're not getting any cheaper to attend. So
no, they're getting more expensive. Actually,
we were able to hold our prices and our sponsorship and exhibitor fees the same. We didn't have a bump at all. So that was good.
Even though Alan raised the speaking fee, I heard. He's charging a lot more for the keynote.
He's a personal friend.
Oh, you know, okay. All right.
So he waived that fee. So we actually have Ray Gatos.
Right? Oh, Ray? Who's Ray?
Well,
you changed my name?
Yeah, I did. You changed mine on Glenn Houseman's show to Greg Wise. So Rad Gantos is actually.
I gave you an adjective.
Yeah.
You okay. Did. I wise called you a wise man. Solomon.
A wise guy or a wise man? Right?
I think it's wise with three letters, and it's a body part or an animal. So.
but thank you for that lead in. Right. No, we're going to be doing. I'm going to be moderating. Greg was kind enough to ask me to moderate the panel on the renovation and the property improvement projects. And we keep talking about hospitality and the market and especially in established destinations or areas that are really hot right now. And a lot of these properties that are the older properties that are just getting a real resurgence, you know, that are in like sweet like locations. And they kind of got hit a little hard, especially some of the larger ones that had really a lot of overhead and costs in running them. And now they're seeing a real resurgence. But the problem is that, A, the economy, B, the change of ownership, whatever, they all need facelifts. They all need to be brought into more current and desirable, you know, kind of service offerings, be it food and beverage, be it the lounge social component. They were never built 20 years ago to have those elements in them or those spaces in them. And so we are actually having a lot of fun doing that, because you're going into an established situation that has a lot of legacy and heritage. You're reinventing and repositioning it, right? In many cases, it has an established market presence within those neighborhoods. In some cases, they have memberships that have been, you know, a decade of memberships. And it's a really fascinating sector of the industry, I think, in being able to do that, especially if you happen to live nearby. Because then that local flavor, that reflection of what's currently happening in that area, the legacy, the connectivity, the importance in the market, in that community as a social gathering place, it's almost like old school. Like you're taking these properties and you're making them even more relevant as a social gathering
place. Somebody tweeted in and give us an example.
Well, I'll give you an example on the bad side. Has anybody stayed at the Los Angeles Biltmore in the past 10, 20 years?
I stayed there 20 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. It's a historic property.
Beautiful property.
And it's irrelevant. It hasn't been updated in at least 20 to 30 years.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about the downtown Biltmore.
Yeah. And I don't know how many rooms are actually viable to be rented at night anymore. They used to have a beautiful restaurant on the ground floor.
Yeah.
And now it's used for nothing more than to film television shows and commercials.
Oh, I didn't know that. When I was there, they had just redone it. This is back with Morton, probably in the late 80s, early 90s.
That was probably the last time. It was Japanese owned then, and they put some money in
it. The irony of which is this is in the same area, stone's throw away from all this other stuff we're talking about.
Yeah. The Indigo.
LA Checkers is across the street, which is a beautiful Hilton Hotel.
So that property's gone down after they haven't been able to keep that revitalization going?
An example of a property, there's a lot of talk about hotels exterior corridor. So these are motels where you drive up to the door and go in from there. Mm-hmm. Most of the major brands will not put their name on a hotel if it is an exterior corridor hotel.
Okay.
A lot of the brands kick them out. So an example of one would be in Solvang, the town famous in the movie Sideways.
Yep.
And it's called the Hatston House Hotel, which is a property that exterior corridor, they talked about you needed to scrape it and build a brand new interior corridor hotel, but the owner went in and renovated that hotel, did a phenomenal job, and it's one of the top performers in that market.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Another famous group called Valencia Hotel Group actually built an exterior corridor motor hotel. So they're going the other way. So as Rat said, this is a resurgence. A lot of these older motels that people were basically going down the chain, you know, lowest denominator in terms of clients, a lot of problems, a lot of problems for cities in terms of crime and things like that.
Hookers and other things.
And now people are revitalizing them, putting money into them, and doing a great job.
You know what's fascinating about this, Ellen, is those are properties, like you said, that were basically the redheaded stepchild of the industry. Nobody really wanted to touch them, especially if it was an established brand, right? And yet, those people that are doing that, I didn't know about the building it from scratch to look at that, but that makes perfect sense to me. You've got emotional capital, you've got nostalgic capital, you've got experience-based capital, and here's the kicker. On that same small footprint, if I basically combine rooms and have higher-end offerings, for whether it is, where it's millennials that are couch surfing and it's more of a kind of like a condo feel or what have you, that aspect of it actually makes for a more boutique, right? If as long as I can make the rest of the experience pencil out, and I'm going into established neighborhoods, I'm down in San Clemente, there's a whole bunch of them on El Camino Real. You wouldn't ever get a chance to build 2-3 stories on that thing, but that's a property right there in a destination city that basically you could make a mint on. You just got to get your head in a different mindset in terms of a business
plan. And you know, I'm seeing this in Palm Springs.
But I love the fact that they're actually building it from scratch. Yeah. Palm Springs is another one with their mid-century modern.
Yeah. Right. I've seen a number of these old rundown hotels be revived and turned into hip, cool places.
The Orbit Inn and various others.
Exactly.
In Palm Springs. Alan's got a listing on one in West L.A.
West L.A., the Azul Inn, which is on Santa Monica Boulevard, right opposite the Mormon Tabernacle, Mormon Temple.
Yes.
And that, to me, is the closest thing that you have to a monopoly because no one can afford to build that product. You're walking distance of Century City. You're a mile from the Waldorf Astoria, which was built at a cost of $1.2 million per room. So these are very, very desirable. You can put a lot of money into them and still charge rates well below the more expensive hotels.
Well, but you're still offering a unique situation for the right person. I mean, and you don't need a lot of them to fill capacity.
So
right?
It's nostalgic. It's a boutique. It's
perfect
small.
For you, actually.
Well, let's call it a motique.
A motique.
I like it.
I might go there.
Yeah.
I think we should. I'll run that. I'll share that panel.
I'll share another one that's a larger property. You said a bad example.
But we'll have a resort fee for you.
I'll share one. I'll give a plug to a client actually. Okay, and it's the old San Regis down in Dana Point.
Yeah.
Okay. We were brought in. It changed hands.
Okay, I think it was 2014 or something of that nature, right? It changed hands. They put money into it. They revamped the public areas. They changed the food and beverage, the main restaurant downstairs.
KSL.
KSL did, right? And it's their business model is to take underperforming properties and do that. They did the same thing with the Omni Group, with the La Costa. Actually, fascinating story. They sold that thing twice, I think, right? It's fascinating, right? But again, it was a learning for
me.
That's
why it's in our DNA.
It is in our DNA. I was waiting for it. It's like you're actually past the hour, right?
Okay. I know. I had to.
It's all right. It's the beginning of the year. I'll let it go. But the thing with them is their business model, and it was a learning for me, right? I'm going in there. We were brought in because there are certain areas. The spa specifically is where we got in. That was our entry point. We were recommended. They were putting in a Marivelle spa in there, which is the first one out of Arizona that is not in Arizona. They were trying to figure out their brand, and it was all kind of confusing. And so they had like a desert theme and a beach town. But to be fair, okay, this is growing pains. Everybody goes through this, right? That's why it's really important to have people that can think outside the box in your team when you're doing that. Otherwise, you're spending money, wasting time. The thing about it is they spent all this money, but they didn't spend money on the locker rooms. Now, here's where it became an issue. You had membership from all those affluent communities around them that had been going to the St. Regis and using the amenities of the pool and all this stuff and so forth. And anybody who knows, if you go to a spa and it's like a gym, right? In that capacity as a member, you're spending a lot of time in those locker rooms, in the steam and the sauna and the jacuzzi. And you've been going there for 10 years or 5 years, and you saw everything around the change except the place that you basically go and basically are your most vulnerable in a robe, right? It feels kind of a little bit odd, like you basically got shafted a little bit, right? Yeah. So we went in and we remodeled the locker rooms for the spa, and I appreciate the opportunity. I want to give a plug to them at Monarch, and Ian Poland as the general manager there, and Marcus and Daniel. And then we started looking at other areas and the stairwell and so forth. And it's actually exciting because this is an established property. Okay, I've been in San Clemente since 87. This property got built in the 90s. I think it was California Pacific Homes or Macaritian maybe that originally did it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like when you talk about Ternea, right? You got the links, and you got the beach club on the sand, and you got this big, huge monster property, and it's huge for South County, right? It's almost overscaled for the market.
Exactly.
Here we are now, where we have like a little Starbucks component kind of equivalent. You got the social lounge, the 33 North that has an outside patio. Michael Mina's Stonehill Tavern, we actually literally pulled a permit to help, and we didn't design it, but we're helping facilitate the construction. It's on a fast track for 4 weeks to put in a bourbon steak, which is the newer concept for Michael, in Edmarek Beach, right? So they're reinventing and repositioning this property, and it's getting back into the system, and it is being embraced, by the community around it, and it's drawing on other people, and we actually have, rumor has it, it's on the market. Right, and rumor has it that it's on the market for a substantial higher number than what they bought it for.
Build it up and flip it.
Right, but my learning point was this, okay, is that every single situation is different. Here's a client that's motivated by that, by improving it and flipping it. Mm-hmm. So for me to come in there and basically propose things that will last 10 and 20 years in terms of finishes, that wasn't the point for them. The point for them was current, immediate, applicable return on investment that we can then turn around and put this property on the market. So it's a fascinating to be part of the hospital. I mean, we're all in this because you're constantly learning. Even after over 15 years of being involved, this was a client that had different set of needs, had guests that had different expectations, and we had to provide that.
Well, and that's exactly it. It's every hotel is different. At the end of the day, I don't care if it's a Hampton Inn or a Courtyard, if it's a St. Regis or a JW.
Right, just because it's flagged under the same doesn't mean.
Yeah, if it's Terranea or, the Montage. Knowing your market, knowing your clientele, and in a lot of cases, being that third, fourth, or fifth bedroom during the holiday season where, okay, your sister and her husband and their three kids are coming into town, and your brother's coming into town, and it's just him and his wife. Mm-hmm. Who's staying at the house? Who's going to the hotel? Right. Okay.
And who's sleeping in the backyard?
Nobody's sleeping in the backyard, Paul. No camping.
Come on.
But the point, and you touched on it as well, is that it is critical.
Yeah.
in this very competitive, it's not getting any less competitive, right?
No.
The costs are not getting any lower, that it's super critical to be talking to somebody like an expert in their market with the legacy and the time on the ground, like Alan and Atlas Hospitality, because it is beneficial for you in everything, including the success of your transaction. Whether it is you're buying to hold, whether you're buying to flip, whatever it is, you got to talk to the right people. Otherwise, loss of time, loss of money, loss of opportunity.
Absolutely.
And go on, so on, and so on.
Well, we have a loss of time facing us here. We wanted to give Alan a little extra time today because he was kind enough to be the first guest on the show. We had a bunch of technical glitches that cut back the video and screwed it all up. We said we got to get him back in here and give him a little extra bonus time for putting up with
it. You can say I'm sorry.
I got a thank you list I need to go through too, Paul.
Yes.
So,
before you do that, though, I get to ask one prerogative here since we gave him some extra time. You all dodged the question. Tell me what the new Star Wars hotel will look like. Will there literally be holograms in the hallway?
Yes, there will.
Robots.
And robots.
There's robots and
people
costumes.
Dressed up, wandering, sort of.
When you're in the hotel, there will be no windows. It'll all be an Ultra HD screen, so it's going to appear that you are in outer space on a space yacht.
And you'll come around the corner and people will be fighting a battle in somewhere. They'll be play acting throughout the whole hotel.
It actually is being planned right now.
I know. Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to. Yeah. What do you think?
It's glamping. It's out in Las Vegas. And it's Mike Tyson's new place.
Yeah, right. Seriously, Mike Tyson's new place.
Mike Tyson is doing a glamping with the marijuana.
California City.
I
just read that.
There is a plan. I don't know if it will come to fruition. For I think it's a 1,000-room hotel out in Indio based on the moon.
Wow. Based on the moon in Indio?
In Indio.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So the sky is the limit. Who knows what will happen?
So since you opened the door on the Star Wars thing, Paul, okay, I hear that you can dress up as a character when you go into the hotel. Like you could actually
you're supposed to be in costume,
right?
Yeah.
So I'm putting you on the spot. What character would you be?
In the Star Wars trilogy, I'm definitely not going to be. Who was that one that everybody hated that they
came back? Binks?
Yeah, right, that one. I couldn't remember that guy's goofy name here. You know, I was a fanatic.
No, seriously.
I was a fanatic when it came out, and I think I'm reflective of everybody in the room. I have no desire to go see Star Wars anymore. I don't know that.
You talked about us dodging the question. I think you're dodging the question.
When I was, Star Wars came out when I was in high school, in college.
Dodging.
And I absorbed it, and then it went away, and my interest in Star Wars went away. So I don't have a deep connection to it. I don't feel
your grandson says.
I think Oliver should be the Emperor.
Yeah. Oh, the Emperor, yes. So I guess I'm saying I don't know enough. I don't remember the trilogy.
Hi,
much.
Oliver.
I'm probably more invested in the Star Trek stuff than
stuff. Your grandson wants to go and stay at the Star Wars hotel. What character are you going to be? You're not dodging this one.
He's going to be Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan. See, I knew you were going to go there, too.
I am your father.
Okay.
I am your father, Rod.
Was Oliver the top broker in your firm for last year again?
Yes, he was.
That's 20
years in a row.
Yeah.
So
congratulations, Oliver Shaw. He is a closing machine, that one. He really is. So, anyhow, before we get out of here this afternoon.
Anything else, Alan, that you'd like to say?
Anything you want to plug? Any listings or any closings?
No, I just would like to give a shout-out to Craig, because putting on a conference, a hotel conference, is extremely difficult. For Craig to have done that, a phenomenal job. Everybody I talked to said it was a huge success. I know the amount of work that goes into it, and for Craig to pull that off on the first go-around is incredible. And the format to just be that one day, huge success. Everybody loved it. So great job, Craig.
We'll talk about knowing your clients, right? I mean, knowing all of us that basically were like, I don't want to do 3 days anymore, and I don't want to go halfway across the country to do it.
Boom. And we're all focused on California,
really.
And we didn't have a California-focused conference.
Every conference you go to, you always have downtime.
Right.
You're going, gosh, this is, I don't want to listen to this speaker, or this isn't very informative. Mm. That never happened at the Craig's conference.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to another year. Congratulations, Craig.
And this year, out in the parking lot, we'll be doing a glamping seminar. We'll have a food truck out there.
We'll
have a food truck, and we'll put some sleeping bags out. And you can come out and talk.
It is a growing trend, so that's probably going to be.
You're laughing.
Yeah.
No, that is going to happen.
So anybody who's interested, because it did sell out too last year.
Yeah.
Right. So let's give out the website for the click.
It is CLIconference.com. And if you're a listener of Checkout California, we do have a discount code for you, so you can save 20%.
Promo code, yeah.
And that is Checkout CA. So please register today. I think it will all sell out. Yeah, we're hoping. We're hoping. I'm knocking on wood.
Oh, it will.
Yeah. You know, we had 232 attendees last year, and we did sell out.
And you didn't have Obi-Wan sitting in the parking lot.
No, we didn't have Obi-Wan. We didn't have the glamping seminar.
We're going to talk about pods, hotel pods, and everything.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah. But it is. It's one day, one room. So you don't have to make that decision to see this panel and miss another one. There'll be plenty of time for networking. We do have a after party. We actually raffled off well in excess of $15,000 worth of door prizes, anything from two-night stays to gift certificates to certificates for professional services.
And we will have a remote Checkout California show.
And I think Glenn Hausman's going to also be doing No Vacancy from there as well. So, Alan, it's always a pleasure to be in the same room with you. You always leave me with more nuggets than I can deal with, so my brain will be spinning all night. Thank you for that, my friend, and thank you for your friendship and your help for all of the years. I want to thank all of our listeners and viewers. I know Kathleen Huntsman, you need to get back to your escrow desk. You're at home sick. I've already talked to you today, and thank you for taking care of my transactions. I appreciate that. Glenn Hausman, thank you for including Checkout California on your website, so you can also pick up our shows there. Glenn is also moderating our opening panel and a sponsor for the California Lodging Investment Conference. I want to thank Park West General Contractors for their continued support and sponsorship as well. They're also a sponsor of the show. Thank you, Ed and Chris, and the rest of the team. Nancy Nguyen should be watching. And Nancy and I turned in our applications to be part of Crew OC. Stacy Steeman is the now president.
Yep, and this organization is amazing, Alan.
You should get one of your guys to go. It's not just for women. It's for all of us. And
be part of the crew.
Let them become part of the crew, and maybe they can pick up some new clientele for your company. So, Stacy, thank you, and I appreciate your email yesterday on that. And
a thank you to everybody who was our guests and let us kind of learn a little bit and get the training wheels off. First 6 months of last year, it was really an amazing experience. Started off with Alan.
Happy New Year. Thank you, Alan.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, Alan.
We look forward to having Paul. Thank you very much, Paul, for manning the board.
Bye, everybody.
We will see you again on the third Wednesday. Thank you for being with us today
on Checkout California. We look forward to having you as a guest with us again in 2 weeks. Until then, you can always reach us through our Checkout California Facebook page or by emailing us at checkoutcalifornia@gmail.com. We love hearing from you, so do let us know what you think of the show and what areas of interest you'd like to see us cover in the future. Your feedback is very important to us as we continue to bring you the best hospitality our Golden State has to offer. Until next time, may all your days be filled with sunsets and palm trees. Now, go experience and check out California.